Rich, thank you very much for inviting us here to St. Luke's. We had a fascinating tour of your facility. It is safe to say that St. Luke's Hospital, the St. Luke's Health System, understands the power of technology to help compassionate doctors and nurses better do their job. And technology is a, what we saw, like unbelievably interesting medical health, medical programs. Programs that enable doctors to better analyze disease and deal with disease before it becomes acute, which is important. The reason why I emphasize the information technology aspects of this hospital is that part of the role of government is to encourage people to make decisions to help hold the cost of healthcare down. And when a hospital modernizes, when you go from files to electronics, it helps hold the cost of healthcare down. One of the interesting things about medicine is that medicine tends to have lagged behind the rest of our economy when it comes to information technology, and yet under Rich's leadership, this facility and its sister facilities are doing some really interesting reforms. We'll talk about it a little bit. I want to thank George Pagels, who's the CEO of this facility. George, thank you. He's a doctor and gave us a tour. Met a lot of really fine nurses and docs, by the way. I appreciate Senator Bond joining us. Thanks for coming. And, of course, our Secretary of Health and Human Services, who will say something here in a minute. I want to talk a little bit about a comprehensive strategy to make healthcare available and affordable. There's no question in my mind that a proper role for the federal government is to help the poor and the elderly and the diseased get health care. We'll do that. And to the extent that these important programs need to be reformed and strengthened, we will do that as well. Witness what we did with Medicare. Medicare was old and stagnant. It needed to be reformed. We reformed it through a generous prescription drug benefit that has actually worked. It's helped our seniors. And so we will do our duty at the federal level. And when we find deficiencies in federal programs, we will work to correct them for the good of the citizens and the taxpayers. The second aspect of our responsibility is to work to make health care available and affordable for all our citizens, and the best way to do that is through private health insurance. Therein lies part of the debate we have in Washington. We believe the private sector is the best delivery of health care. We know there's a role for the federal government, but it's not to dictate. It's not to be the decision maker. And so Mike and I and others in my administration have been strategizing on how best to make health care available and affordable. Here are some ways. One, helping spread information technology. We're the biggest user of health care in the United States, and therefore we can help people understand the benefits of using information technology. Secondly, price transparency. One reason we came to this hospital is that, under Rich's leadership, this hospital system has been willing to place its prices and its quality ratings out for consumers to see. I mean, healthcare is an interesting industry, isn't it, where a lot of times you have no idea about the price of the service you're paying for. You just assume it's okay. Somebody says, here's your price, and you say, okay, I'll pay it. We believe that with price transparency and quality assessments, consumers will have better decision-making process. And we want consumers making decision in healthcare. When you think about a system where there's a third-party payer, so you got your insurance, somebody pays your bills for you, and you're not involved. You kind of assume that the third-party payer is making a rational decision on your behalf. And our view is that in order to have to worry about healthcare costs, the more a consumer is involved, the more likely we'll be able to deal with the increasing cost of healthcare. Another reform is medical liability reform. I'm walking around the hospital here. A professional comes up to me and says, we practice too much medicine for fear of lawsuits, which raises the cost of your bill. See, if the medical provider is worried about getting sued, they will make decisions on how to stay out of the court of law more than as important as decisions on how to keep you healthy. And medical liability is a real problem in a lot of states. And we're trying to get the United States Congress to hear that same call. And I'll keep working on medical liability reform. Why? To help make health care more affordable. But also, when you get a lot of lawsuits, it costs good docs to quit the practice of medicine. There are a lot of counties in the country that do not have OBGYN because these lawsuits have run them out of practice. And it's not right, and it's not fair. And so we need to have the political will in Washington to take on a very powerful lobby, which is the trial lawyers, and prevent these frivolous lawsuits from running up the cost of your medicine and running the good docs out of practice. A couple of other points I want to make before we talk about this new initiative I laid out to the country. I think it's very important to help develop plans that make the consumer in charge of as much of the healthcare decision as possible. These are called One Idea's health savings accounts. This basically says that there is a product available for you to use where you're the decision maker, and you're able to contribute tax-free, earn money in your account tax-free, take money out tax-free on medicine. If you don't spend the money in your account 1 year, you can roll it over. It becomes a savings account. It's an incentive for you to make good decisions about your life, and it also provides catastrophic care in case something bad happens to you. We'll talk about health savings accounts here in a minute, and their effect on enabling people who do not have insurance to have health care available and affordable for them. Finally, small businesses need help. I mean, it's hard to be able to buy insurance when you're a standalone company, and you know, insurance is basically a spreading of risk through pooling of risk, and we just need to allow small businesses to be able to buy insurance at the same discounts that big companies can by pooling risk. In other words, a restaurant in Missouri ought to be able to have their employees insured with a restaurant in Texas. In other words, put them all in the same pool so they can get the benefits of spreading risk. Now, these are practical things to get done, and they're hard to get done in Washington because people in Washington have a different view. They want the government basically making the decisions for health care. The view of the people here is that you ought to be making those decisions. One way to encourage you to make the right decisions when it comes to health care is to take the inequities out of the tax code. If you work for a company, you get your health care free, in essence. It's part of the benefit package. If you're a standalone person, you pay your health care on an after-tax basis. In other words, there's discrimination in the tax code based upon who you work for. It makes it harder for people to be able to, individuals or small company employees, to be able to buy health care. And so what we said, and Michael spent a little time describing this, we said that all Americans who have health care ought to be allowed to have a $15,000 deduction on your income taxes if you're a married couple, if you're married, and if you're not, $7,500. In other words, the benefits you receive from your company become part of your taxable income, offset by a $15,000 deduction. And so if you benefits you get from your company are $11,000, you'll have $4,000 deducted from your income. And that's important. It also will help people who are uninsured or on the verge of being uninsured. In other words, it encourages the development of an individual market. It makes it more likely an individual will be able to afford health care. If you've got a family of four with $60,000 income, you get a substantial tax savings, which will then enable your health insurance to be more affordable. And we'll talk about that. The point I'm trying to make to you is the system is geared toward enabling the individual to have more control over his or her decision-making and make the tax code fair for the individual. And finally, I've instructed Michael to work with states. We believe that there's been some very innovative policy that takes place at the state level, and we ought to cover the uninsured, to help the sick, to help those who are poor be able to get insurance. And so we're going to have flexibility with federal money that goes to states. And all we request is the states develop a basic health insurance plan that becomes more affordable. Oftentimes, the plan that is only available for the individual is priced out of their control because of mandates and add-ons. And Michael's going to say to governors, look, we're going to help you. You got some interesting ideas. I think it makes sense to use federal money to help you with those ideas. But you need to develop a basic plan so that health care is affordable for more of our citizens. And here's a comprehensive strategy. A lot of times in Washington, they say, well, you know, let's just design it there in the federal government. It'll all work. It won't, in my judgment. It'll become bureaucratic. It'll become costly. It won't empower individuals. It'll make it harder to get affordable health care. And so here's a strategy, a multiple-pronged strategy, a strategy that says there's a lot of things we need to do to help our American citizens be able to buy private health insurance. Leavitt's in charge. Michael's the Secretary of Health and Human Services. He spent a lot of time on the subject. You might want to add a few comments, and then we can hear from some of our citizens here.
Thank you.
Well, there is a wide aspiration held in this country for everybody to have the basic affordable policy available to them. You pointed out there are two kind of diverging points of view right now. One, some people would say, look, let's have the federal government insure everybody and basically take over health care. And then there's those who would say, let's have the states create partnerships with the federal government and the private sector, and we'll use innovation and market forces to make things better. You've made very clear how you stand on that subject. Today, Governor Blunt is excused from our gathering because he is out, having yesterday made his State of the State address with health care being the primary point of that address. He's out talking to the people of this state about it, as are governors all over the country. Now, I've been through a lot of these efforts to help people acquire basic insurance, and you always run into one very serious roadblock, and that is a person who works in a restaurant, or a person who is a service provider with a small business. When they buy insurance, if they have to buy it after they've paid taxes, it's just too heavy a lift. They can't get there, particularly if there isn't a basic plan. So what you suggested and what we'll be doing with states all over the country is we want to help them do two things. One is we want to remove a just undefendable part of the tax code that really started in the 1940s, not by the law, but just by a set of circumstances that happened when they passed wage and price controls. They just started allowing people to get tax-deductible health insurance. Nobody ever designed this system, and it doesn't make sense. But the states haven't been able to come up with plans that were affordable because people like Esmeralda and Dan haven't been able to pay for their health insurance in dollars that were pre-tax. They've had to pay their taxes first. On the other hand, people like Jim or people like Martha have been in a business, and they are able to do it. And it's just indefensible that we would provide it to Jim and to Martha, but not to Esmeralda and Dan. And you've taken that fight on, and I believe we'll undoubtedly solve that problem. The second dilemma you also put well, and that is creating a basic, affordable plan. But there'll be people who, even after the plan is basic and affordable, and even after they have the tax benefit that everyone else gets, will still need some help. And so that's what the president has suggested. We want to create a pool of money that we can partner with states to do that. Now, here's the principle. Right now in this country, we're spending more than $35 billion perpetually paying the health care bills for a lot of people who are uninsured. Wouldn't it make more sense if we could use some of that money to just help them get insurance? And then if we treat them in the same way we do those who buy it from business, we really are within reach of being able to meet this national aspiration we all feel of having every person have access to an affordable basic insurance policy. I think, Mr. President, you'll get a lot of interesting perspective.
Yeah, Levin, one thing table. Before you get... I see we got some cameramen here. Why don't you give them the cameraman story?
I had a terrific conversation yesterday.
All you cameramen out there.
You know, someone asked me, actually it was a news organization here in Missouri, anticipating our trip, asked me, what are you going to talk about? And I said, essentially, we've got this problem that we're trying to solve with people who work in restaurants or in daycare centers or are self-employed, And it's unfair that they should be treated in a way, and I could see the cameraman.
He's an independent contractor. Yeah. He's on his own, basically.
But he was behind the camera doing this, which is unusual.
Because he wants to be treated just like the person who works for big corporate America, and he wants to be able to have that deduction.
So before we were even off the satellite, he's saying, and you should have said independent cameraman.
That's right.
He said, you know how much I pay for insurance? He says, it's $1,350 a month, and I have to pay it after I pay my taxes, and it's just not fair.
Right.
It isn't fair. This is the right thing to be doing.
Thank you. Rich, thanks for having us. Appreciate you inviting, letting us tour your hospital here.
Well, we really are grateful that you came, and we've had a great experience with the White House. Actually, Laura, this tie that I have on actually was part of her red dress campaign, and so we have been very blessed in your administration, and we thank you so very much. And we are grateful to all of you to come to St. Luke's, because this particular facility is one of the very few digital hospitals in the country. And the President's had a chance to see some of that technology, even our ability to monitor hospitals as far away as Hayes, Kansas. We actually monitor their ICU from Lee's Summit, Missouri. And that's where healthcare is going. And Secretary Leavitt, if there is any way that we're going to be able to provide healthcare for the future, IT will be principal to our ability to do it. The good news is, at least here in Kansas City, St. Luke's is already doing it. But I want to tell you, it's very expensive. And yet, just the savings alone, we reported some EICU savings that we have with a mortality rate that's about 20% less than the national average for ICU treatment. And at the same time, our cost is about 25%. The initial cost is high, but and the vision, sometimes it's hard to get everybody to buy into it. But one of the things we talked about earlier is that this hospital, if you want to be a member of the medical staff, you have to learn how to use the computer. It is very computer-centric in what we do. And so we're so grateful that you came here, and I thank Secretary Leavitt as well, because I think we'll be able to help interact as you continue your program, because on the hospital side, to save costs, to reduce the cost for the consumer, it's really going to be from the IT side. And the IT side on quality, one of the programs we have here that we've talked about is Priceline. If you're a patient of any insurance plan, you can actually contact St. Luke's, and we can go to your plan. We just require four pieces of information, and we can go to your plan, and we can tell you how much your health care cost, your out-of-pocket cost, is going to be. And it takes us about 45 minutes, but it is being computerized as we speak. Now it's about half of it is not, it's still manual. But it is the wave of the future. You have to have that information if you're going to make the decision. And any health plan that is developed will require that consumer has a chance to decide, where do I want to go based on quality and based on price.
Sure.
You have that capability with IT.
The other thing that's interesting about Rich is doing availability of health care. They've got like a specialist sitting in Kansas City capable of analyzing somebody's graphs in a remote region, which, again, remember, it's affordability and availability for health care. And information technology is able to make medicine available throughout rural Missouri or rural Kansas, for example, and it's very exciting, and I appreciate what you're doing.
I want to make certain people understand here the three things that are happening that need to happen all over the country here that are happening. The first is you're a connected system. If a patient wants to get their medical records, they can do it in a convenient way. People need to have access to their own records in a way that'll be convenient to them. This idea that a patient then can have an independent assessment of the quality of the care that their provider is giving them is revolutionary and very important. But then you combine that with the ability for people to know what it costs. Once you have the cost and the quality, you're now making decisions based on value. that's what we hope in the future. The whole system will become a connected system that has competition based on value, where consumers are making decisions as opposed to someone other than the consumer.
Dr. Jim Kelly, why don't you tell people what you do, doctor?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Let me guess.
I'm an anesthesiologist at St. Luke's Hospital downtown on the Plaza campus, and I'm happy to report that what you are trying to do at the federal level as far as tort reform, through an unfortunate set of circumstances in Missouri, it's not something we wanted to do, but we were faced with a crisis, and the physicians, many left, some, the people who were going to stay wanted to make the practice of medicine and patient care first, and in the early 2000s, we were faced with malpractice premiums for orthopedists, neurosurgeons, trauma doctors, OBs, that had been in the $20,000 range and had gone up to the $100,000 range, $150,000, $180,000 range. And that was just not sustainable. And so the physicians banded together and elected that they wanted to work on this. And we became involved in the system, undertook education efforts, and were involved in Jefferson City and got tort reform passed in both 03 and 04. The governor at that time vetoed both proposals, and an override failed. During that time, the physicians, some were defeatists, but many stayed energized, got involved in a governor's election, and worked to elect a governor that understood our issues. And I'm pleased to report that in 2005, we had tort reform not only passed by the legislature, but also signed by the governor, became law. The day before it became law, phenomenal amounts of lawsuits were filed. Those are still all out there. And I'd like to tell you that our malpractice premiums have decreased. They have not, but they have stabilized. Mm-hmm. And when the actuaries get done taking care of the risk that's out there, I think our premiums will stabilize. And it's through the work of a lot of Missouri physicians that we have been able to do this. And it allows us to work to take care of the patient first, not always be concerned about the defensive medicine. Yeah.
I don't think people know what you mean by defensive medicine. Why don't you describe that?
Well, you're always concerned. One, we're here to take care of patients, and that's our primary objective. But if you are told that you do a poor job or everybody lives in fear of being sued, and they will go to extreme lengths to document that everything they're doing is the right thing. If any of us, we're so unfortunate to fall down right now and bump our head, it would be hard to get out of this hospital if you tell the emergency room physician that you hit your head without a CT scan, maybe even an overnight stay in the ICU. They want to make sure that they're okay and not just trust their clinical skills that it's a little bump on the head.
Or we're practicing maybe too much medicine.
Too much medicine, an extra test.
Actually costs the federal government something like $23 billion a year.
And this is something that we have seen. As an anesthesiologist, we had a malpractice crisis in the mid-'80s. And our rates, at that time, the anesthesiologists were the most costly to gain liability insurance. Yeah. And we took a method where we hired systems engineers and actually founded the first Patient Safety Foundation. So we could look at where, through the whole process, do things go wrong, mm-hmm. and make differences. At that time, the risk of a death from an anesthetic was 1 in 10,000. Right now, I'm happy to tell you that it's 1 in about 300,000. And a lot of that work is due to the American Society of Anesthesiologists taking a look at the patient first and seeing what we can do to make things better.
Well, I appreciate you. I happen to believe this is a federal issue. When I first came to Washington, I said we ought to allow these each state to determine their own medical liability reform. I believe it's, and I chose to make it a Washington issue because it's costing our taxpayers so much money. That being, when I say costing, we're a big consumer of health care through Medicare, Medicaid, veterans benefits, and when doctors' premiums go up, they charge more, and when doctors are fear of being sued, they practice more medicine than is necessary. And I don't know if $20 billion is the right number, but it's a lot. I think it is something like that. And that's extra money for the taxpayers, and I'd like to get it done in Washington, D.C., frankly. And I believe medical liability is a huge issue. I know it's a huge issue in a lot of states, and we'd like to help you. Thanks for working on it. Appreciate you being involved. Jim Henderson.
Thank you, Mr.
President.
Well, not like you, but thank you very much.
Dynamic Sales, Inc., where are you based?
And what St. Louis, do? Missouri. We're a construction and industrial supply company.
Right.
And I'm a second-generation owner. It's been very good. The economy's been very good to us, and the business has been booming. We're on our 11th record year.
Good.
So we're very pleased.
All because of good management.
From the top down.
How many employees?
We have 7 employees, 5 full-time, 2 part-time.
Right. And your issue with health care?
Escalating costs. I'm glad to see everybody in the country is getting excited about it, but we've been dealing with it for over 17 years.
Yeah.
Back in that day, we had a 100% coverage. We didn't have to worry about deductibles. We didn't have to worry about a PPO or what doctor or hospital we went to. We could just go anywhere, get treated, and it was taken care of. The carrier we were with at that time said they didn't want us to have that program anymore. They wanted us to get off of that program. They didn't like it. But they couldn't take it from us, but they could raise rates to where we would buckle and ask them for something else, and it didn't take them long to do that. So then we moved into the PPO plan, and then we had to go from a zero deductible to a $100 deductible. And we also had to go from paying 98% of our employees' premium and their dependents to doing a 70-30 split with the employee only. And they can add their dependents, but they have to pay for their dependents. And that's not real attractive. But then we went from that zero deductible to a $100 deductible. Our rates continued to increase at an average of about 9% a year until 1998. I'm sorry, until 2003. Then we were faced with a 25% increase. And we had no major losses. We had the same type of census, so there wasn't a big change in our census to worry about. But we were faced with that kind of increase. We asked what we were going to do. And their suggestion was, raise your deductible to a $1,000 deductible. We can keep your premium at the same level, and then you just have a higher deductible. Well, that way you're not spending more money for health care. Well, maybe not as a company, but now we're asking the individual families, hey, now you've gone from zero to 100, now we're up to 1,000, and your doctor's visit is going to be more expensive, your drugs are going to be more expensive, and just right up the line. That continued. And continued, and every year we saw another increase, 13%, 14%, and it continued until this year we were given another increase of 13%. Again, for the same program, the same census, no major losses incurred. This year we're looking at a 13% increase. The response was, well, raise your deductible to $2,000, and then you won't have to face that 13%. So the company's premium doesn't go up, but the individual's now paying $1,000. We've done that, but we've also initiated health reimbursement account. So the company has set that up, which of course is a cost to the company, but we've set that up to kind of pool that risk for the employees. So they are still responsible for the first $1,000 like they've been for years, but now the company will reimburse anything over that $1,000 up to the $2,000 level. If everything goes well and we fall within the statistics of Missouri of the 20% range, we will end up, quote, saving $3,300. I say the word save in quotes because we raised our deductible. We're now, as a company, taking a risk, which is what I thought insurance was supposed to do for us. But now, as a company, we're taking a calculated risk that only 20% of our employees will hit us up for that extra money. If something goes wrong and they all hit us up for it, we're going to lose an additional $4,400.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they say, well, we can keep your premiums the same, they're not really saving us anything because we're having to pass it along to the employee,
that's right,
of which I am an employee of the corporation.
Right.
So now my health insurance costs just went up too. And it's just a vicious cycle that we've been dealing with for 17 years.
This is probably the biggest problem we hear from small businesses around the country. And in that small businesses create most new jobs in America, it makes sense to come up with plans to help small businesses thrive. Michael, I don't know if you want to comment on this deductibility plan because I think it's going to save your employees a lot of money and make it easier for you to be in a position to do what you want to do, which is be, you know, consider yourself a good employer.
Well, that's the hard thing is, you know, when you're trying to hire more people, health insurance is really important. And if you're telling people, well, we've got a $2,000 deductible and a 70-30 split, but hey, we're a good company to work for. Well, you might be a nice family company to work for, but I can't afford to work.
Have you looked at this deal that I proposed?
Yes, sir, I have. And from what I've looked at off of the information you've sent to me, I think it's going to be very attractive.
And how does it help you?
Jim could describe it, or I, Well, I mean, Jim is like a lot of other small businesses. If he and his employees had this ability to have the standard exemption, in Jim's case personally, he'd have the exemption. He'd get the tax savings. It would be he'd have about a $2,183 increase in his take-home pay. The value of the actual deduction to him would be $7,200, which would go a long ways to helping defer some of those costs. When you look at that example, and take Martha for example, Martha had a similar problem as Jim did and chose to go to a health savings account.
Yes.
When you combine these two, it becomes well within the grasp of almost any employee to have an affordable basic health insurance. Martha, maybe you can...
Just one point before you go. I think it's very important for our citizens to know that as we level the playing field between employees of little companies and big companies, it makes it easier for small companies to stay in business. The tax code, it treats a certain group of people in the United States unfairly when it comes to health care. People who work for big businesses get their health care on a, you know, without, they pay no taxable income on it. Small companies who are having trouble staying in business because of the nature of their size of the company pass on the increased cost to their employees, and we've got to level the playing field from a taxes perspective. It is by far the most hopeful and fair option of any medical health care option out there today. Unless, of course, you want the federal government running it all. Say, okay, we'll provide you insurance, and we'll provide everybody insurance, which would be a mistake. Anyway, listen to health savings accounts. I don't want to be Mr. Lecturer, but it's an interesting option for you.
We did look at those, but for our employees, they weren't as attractive because our employees said, you know, if I could set aside, you know, $2,000 a year or whatever to put into a health savings account, I'd be doing it anyway.
And so they'll be able to, with this
tax change, they'll now have the money that can go to do just that.
And that's been what's so frustrating about this is each year those costs go up. We want to make it affordable for our employees. The company's paying more for the insurance that they're receiving. We don't get to turn around and say to our customers, hey, we're raising your prices 25% because our insurance went up.
No.
And when we ask the insurance, why is it going up? We haven't had these major losses. Their reply is, because we can. I mean, that's what I was told. Because we can. I'd like to tell all my customers that. Hey, I'm raising your prices 25% because I can.
Right. It's a problem. And the reason I've come here to discuss this with a frustrated small business owner like you is because we believe that we've designed a solution that will help a lot.
Yes, sir.
And Martha.
Yes.
Why don't you tell everybody what you do? Are you as passionate about your employees as...
Yes,
as my man Jim. That's good.
I've been in the business for 30-plus years, and having health insurance has always been a big issue. I think we as the employee individuals now are facing what Jim said is the individual and the employer are facing the same problem right now.
Let me ask you something. How many employees do you have?
30.
Oh, yeah?
Of which 6 are full-time.
Right.
And
so you started getting squeezed.
Yes, from the very beginning. In fact, for many years, no one wanted to insure someone that had only 30 employees.
Yeah, or 6 full-timers.
Yes. It's like, well, you're just not...
It's one reason why you don't have a lot of leverage.
Right.
Exactly.
People don't want to insure you.
If we've dropped below 5, we've been told.
Yeah, so you're at 6 full-time, 24 part-time. And
so
you started looking at options, and what happens?
Right, we went with the HSAs. We've been with them for 2.5 years. We were able to give more full-time people insurance. We saved 40% of what we had been paying.
Yeah, see, that's why I think you get somebody to...
So...
HSAs really do hold the cost
down
for small
do.
Businesses.
They really do.
It's a little difficult to get the employee to sign on at first, right? It's a
right.
novel concept as opposed to somebody paying your bills. And an HSA basically says you're in charge of your own health care.
Right. And it gives the small business person a little advantage over the larger business person because they have their own savings account.
That's right.
And they can it grows and it's theirs and it you know they become more responsible for how they spend their health care.
High deductible, catastrophic care plan with the company and or the individual contributing tax-free the amount of the deductible into a savings account.
Yes.
The person owns their savings account. In other words, it's beneficial to small business because it's cheaper to buy the HSA than it is normal insurance that you're battling for.
I agree with you 100%. Yes, and our employees are very pleased. And, I mean, really it was a lifesaver for us.
Yeah.
Because it just became such a big problem, as we see all across the board now with individuals, you know, low income, middle income. Most of our people are middle income, so that's to their advantage.
See, the problem with small businesses and individuals is that there's no market relative to, like, big companies. It just isn't. And we need to help establish a market. Demand will yield the supply of insurance policies so long as states enable there to be the development of a basic plan without mandates and, you know, things added on to it. And that's really one of the benefits of HSAs, by the way. It is like a basic health care plan. Let me ask you something. Do your employees like the idea of being able to... Of course they like the idea.
Yes.
Your employees are able to take their health care with them from job to job. Take the savings account aspect.
Exactly.
It's theirs, not yours.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Can I ask Martha a question?
Sure.
Martha, I have an HSA, so I have some experience with it, but I'm curious as to your experience with them. Did it cause you to be more interested in what things were costing than when you just had an insurance card?
Exactly.
I remember the first time I walked into a drugstore with my HSA and presented them with my new card and I knew I was... that my savings, my health savings account would be paying part of it. And they, this prescription I had was going to be $379. And I'd been getting this prescription for quite a while, and I had no idea what it was going to cost. And I said to the druggist, is there a generic version of this? It changed my way of thinking about this completely. Did you have that experience? Have you seen that, any kind of change in the way your employees have thought about this as a result?
Well, in a middle income, you don't have people that take for granted their insurance or home, you know, or people that have their own business. They're not out there looking for someone to hand them something. You know, they're willing to work to get to the place where they can afford health insurance. I mean, it's a privilege. I think people think that everyone expects that it's something that should be there, and where's the money going to come from? They all just think that it's all there. But the federal government, that's not their responsibility. I feel like it's our responsibility to do our part. Each one does their own part. They'll help to carry the load. You know, you just can't expect the federal government or the state. Each one has to do their own part, I believe. And this helps each one do their own part and feel responsible and carry the load.
Something that Rich said and that Martha is important. One of the things they're doing here at St. Luke's is that they are allowing people to know what the prices are in advance. A lot of people go to hospitals and they say, I'd like to know how much this costs. And the hospital just isn't equipped to answer that question.
Right.
Or the doctor just doesn't think about what the cost is, because usually it's just about processing the insurance. This gets at the heart of how we keep costs down. If suddenly people begin to ask themselves, is there a generic version of this? How much should this cost? Those are the kinds of questions that begin to create small businesses with a competitive product. And hospitals like the one we're in today have led in that transparency, knowing the quality, knowing the cost, being involved in the decision. It's a very important way to keep costs down.
Yeah, that's why the best healthcare system is one that recognizes that decisions made by doctors and patients are the best decisions. It's best to hold down costs. It's best to enhance quality. It is really what happens in most other aspects of our market. It doesn't happen. It's been happening in healthcare, and the policies that we're detailing are trying to encourage more consumer involvement in order to hold down costs. And it's a foreign concept for a lot of people because it hadn't been happening for years. And it's a concept that, frankly, some in Washington don't like because it runs contrary to a philosophy that basically says the federal government's a better decision maker. Anyway, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for being an innovator. The The tax deduction is going to help you folks?
Yes, very much so.
$15,000?
Yes.
$7,500 for a single person.
I can't imagine why someone would not
before
think it would.
Well, it's an interesting question, particularly since it's a revenue neutral proposal, which is important. Cost money or lose money? It's, according to the experts, it's revenue neutral. Dan Jones, where do you live?
In St. Louis, Missouri.
You do. Home of the mighty Cardinals.
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. President.
We came to the White House recently.
Yeah. I am a small business employee of a computer company outside of St. Peter's, Missouri. Mm. Specialize in computers, hardware, software, maintenance, consulting. And your health care proposal looks very profitable to me. You know, I mean, if I'm going to make, say, we'll give a rough estimate, $600 a week, and I can save $7,500 off my taxes, get a tax deduction for $7,500. Doing the math, I save about $2,300 a year. Well, since I don't have insurance, that $2,300 a year can be put towards insurance. You know, being a former, you know, I've had insurance, and when I had it, it just kept raising up and up and up and up and up. You know, started 170 and went to 190, 200, 220, 230, and finally got to $400. Well, $400 a month is $4,800. That's a large chunk of money out of my pay. Plus, after taxes, you know, I mean, that $4,800 can be put towards, you know, a car, a house. You know, I mean, I had to cut it because you look at what you have and, you know, your decisions to make as a live person. You've got your cell phone. I can't get rid of my cell phone for what I do. Customers need to be able to contact me. Stated in the contracts. Can I get rid of my electric? If I like spoiled milk, sure. Do I want to get in my car? I got to be able to get around. Yeah, I mean, you just have to make those decisions and look at those decisions.
Here's a classic guy, young guy in the marketplace, basically priced out of the individual market.
Yes, sir.
And the plan helps him. Yeah. As a matter of fact, they were telling me coming in that you could buy a good health care plan for about $1,300. You know,
yeah, I was looking. We were looking at that, and you know, within the state of Missouri, I can get about $1,300 for, you know, pretty really nice health care for the year.
Say $2,270
over the year.
Taxes, so you put $929 in your pocket.
Absolutely,
does it make sense to do that? I think it does.
Yeah.
You know, what could you do with just a little over under $1,000? That's Christmas, you know.
Well, why don't you think about saving it?
Yeah, well, I got a gigantic family, and I got a godchild who buy me this, buy me that.
There are plenty of people who feel like they're doing just fine when it comes to health insurance, particularly those who work for big corporate America, which is fine. It's just that the system discriminates against the Dan Joneses,
mm-hmm.
because the tax code that has evolved over time has made it harder for him relative to other people in our society to purchase insurance.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what this plan is designed to do. We're trying to move somebody like Dan from being a statistic, an uninsured person, into insurance. And here is a logical way for the government to do so. And if people in Washington are serious about dealing with the uninsured, here is a serious idea for them to consider. Instead of just dismissing things because of pure politics, we have put forth ideas that are worthy of debate and we believe will work. And I know that our citizens, fellow citizens, and regardless of their political party, expect there to be a serious dialogue on constructive ideas that are put forward to make sure people like Dan Jones have got private insurance. And I thank you for coming and sharing. How many people work in your firm?
3 full-time employees right now, but you know,
but you're growing.
More. Absolutely.
There you are.
You know, small businesses, they grow. And the more money you save along the way, the more you can grow.
There you go. Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Tom. Appreciate you coming, Tom. Tom Beauregard. What do you do?
I lead a business within United Healthcare that's focused on extending access to the uninsured.
Oh, really?
So we see the your tax parity proposal as important. There really is a need to kind of level the playing field between the employer market and the individual market. So we're seeing, you know, small employers who are having a hard time staying in the game because of affordability. We see more and more workers in an independent status, so about 20% of the population now is working in a, you know, independent contractor, consultant environment where traditional health insurance isn't available. And then the other thing we see is just changes in the labor market, where you've got people moving from job to job. So the average individual have about 10 jobs across their career now.
That's right.
So there really is a need for...
That's an interesting point. Excuse me. A lot of people in America probably know this, but just in case they don't, most people change jobs like 7 or 8 times before they're 35 years old in America these days.
Yeah, and that it's accelerating.
Which means you better have a portable health care plan.
So it's affordability and it's portability.
Yeah.
And those are two categories that are really important to focus on. And if we look at the tax proposal, to your point, if that can be coupled with state initiatives, so funding for low-income individuals, and then, to your point, essential benefit plans. We've got to get down to private sector innovation that has designs that, in fact, are reasonable and affordable.
Yeah.
So I think partnership between federal, state, and the private sector, we can extend health insurance on an affordable basis.
I appreciate you studying it.
Thanks.
You may need to come up to Washington to testify. Thank you very much. Now, why don't we end with Esmeralda? Esmeralda, welcome.
Thank you.
Where do you work?
I work at my grandmother's restaurant, Ninfa's Tortillas. I'm a waitress.
Ninfa's? You recommend it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How your cheese enchiladas?
Perfect. And she makes them herself.
Does she really?
She's back there.
What's your name?
Ninfa.
Ninfa. That's what I thought. Good, married?
Yes, married with 2 children.
How old?
I have a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old. Both boys.
Fabulous. And so give us your health insurance story.
Well, I think more or less, some jobs offer you health insurance plans, but they cover nothing. You're paying so much a month for this insurance policy, but yet it really covers nothing that you need it to.
Yeah.
Right now, my husband and I are kind of doing our homework on different insurance plans and policies and things like that, but it's really hard to find one that's going to suit your family's needs. And then once you finally find that, just the X amount of dollars you're paying out of your pocket a month is very difficult to do, especially with 2 little boys who like to run into walls and hurt themselves all the time.
This plan we've outlined would save Esmeralda and her family $3,500 a year. Does it make sense to level the playing field and have a rational tax code and enable her to be able to purchase health insurance? I think it does.
Yeah.
Rather than having family sit outside the system, you know, grinding away on trying to find a health care system that they can afford, why not help them afford health care system through making the tax code fair? That's all we're asking. Isn't that right?
Oh. Whatever you say, Mr. President.
Even you more like that.
Yeah. Esmeralda, thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
I hope people got a flavor of what we're trying to get done. That this plan helps people be able to afford private health insurance. And that is really the crux of good health care. Good health care is a health care system where government helps people who need help, like the poor, those who are hard to insure. Part of what we recognize is that Mike needs to give states flexibilities to help set up risk pools to deal with adverse selection when it comes to individualized markets. But ultimately, the best health care plan is one that trusts people like Esmeralda and her family, or Jones, Dan Jones, to make decisions, and is one that enables our small business sector to remain economically viable. We thought long and hard about what to propose. We proposed a bold initiative, an initiative that takes equities out of the system so people are treated fairly. And I know Americans expect that the United States Congress will take a good look at all ideas to determine how best to make this healthcare system run well. And I thank you all for coming and giving us a chance to talk with you. Appreciate your candor. Appreciate what you do for the country. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good job.